This is the As Far As I Know podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the As Far As I Know podcast, the show where we try to outthink our feelings and satisfaction is not guaranteed. Today, joining us on the show are Mr. Matt Rose. Hello, Matt. How are you?
In your face, Fozzie. I'm first.
Well,
I'm very excited to be first.
Speaking of Fozzie's face, hello. We're also joined today by Fozzie's beard. Hi, Fozzie's beard. How are you?
Can I talk yet? Am I allowed to move and talk yet? Oh, God, I'm glad to be here.
Introducing Fozzie's beard makes it sound like that your fake hetero girlfriend is joining us.
She lives in Canada. You don't know
you
her.
You don't know her.
Been dating her since high school.
Here, let me call her on Skype. Oh, hello, everyone.
I'm Helen Doubtfire.
Oh, jeez. All right, well, we already did disappointing movies. So we're going to do, today we're going to talk about something.
Wait, hold it. What? You were excited about Mrs. Doubtfire?
I don't know. I shouldn't have even brought it up. We're going to talk
about something
a little different today in terms of geeky culture stuff. We've been, talking a lot about entertainment, and that's awesome, but that's mostly been coming in the screen form. So what we're going to talk about today is entertainment like in the meat world, specifically toys. There is not a lot that is more geeky than a geek's toys. And in fact, most of us still cling to at least the memories of the toys that we had when we were kids. So we thought we would talk a little bit about what kinds of the, you know, which of the toys that was launched in the 80s is the best toy. So we'll get right into that. So let's
Andy, we're talking about like toys that were made to be toys, not like necessarily like Star Wars was a movie and then they made toys.
Something that started as a toy, which you know, obviously there's a lot of stuff that then also became cartoon shows or.
And when you're talking about toys of the meat world, you don't mean the meat world gay bar in Chelsea, do you?
No, is there a gay bar in Chelsea called the Meat World?
Probably there is. I don't know. I'm assuming.
How could there
not be? If that's the case, that opens up a whole world for this show.
Now there will be.
Somebody just heard that and was like, that's a great idea.
Right. I need investors.
Well, as long as we're giving people great ideas. Let's take a few minutes and talk about our feelings.
Let's talk about our feelings.
So, Matt, I know a little bit about you, and I happen to know that you have a pretty big 80s toy hang-up.
I do. My favorite is Jim, of course. No.
I don't think that started as a toy. That's a fail.
I think it did. I disagree. Anyways, I am a huge 80s toy guy. I had quite a few different toys growing up, but by far my favorite toys growing up in the 80s were what's more than meets the eye, robots in disguise. Transformers.
Transformers. Yes.
Don't you dare say GoBots. Don't you dare. You take that GoBots and throw them away. You take Leader One and Scooter and Psykill and why do I know so many names?
Chopper? Throw them all away. That was a GoBot, right, Chopper?
Yep. That was clever for them. Anyway.
Love how geeky we get. Oh, this is so much fun.
I loved Transformers. I remember when I was a kid wanting Transformers so badly and how cool they were. And like, you have to remember before Transformers came out, like there was not transforming toys. That was like a completely new concept, for toys and like, oh my God, it's a truck. And, well, now it's a robot. And that just blew our little minds. But yeah, I remember like having a dollar a week allowance and saving up, I think it was like 26 weeks in a row. I could afford Optimus Prime. And I remember buying that and being so proud that I had saved up for that. It was like the first thing I really remember
saving
up for.
You saved up for
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did. And
that was a lot of money back then.
I had a piece of paper, and I drew Optimus Prime, and I had boxes, and I marked one off every week that went by.
Oh, man.
You were like in the movies, you're marking off the days of the calendar?
Yeah, I wish it was a montage, but it would take me a long time. But, yeah, I mean, to give a little bit of my love for Transformers, I mean, like, for example, there is currently an Autobot symbol on my SUV right now, to give you an idea of how much I think Transformers are cool. And I also, the first movie I ever went to...
Wait, was it there when you bought it?
No.
Because I
was not the Transformers.
I wouldn't trust that car if that's the case.
If it was there when I bought it, it'd be awesome.
If it's an SUV, though, does it transform into, like, a soccer mom Midwestern robot?
Oh, here, hi! I've got my plasma cannon out now. Should we go get the Decepticons there? But I remember going to the movie like when I was a kid, and I went alone. It was the first movie I ever got alone, and spoilers coming up. I'm watching Optimus Prime kick butt, and I'm like, this is the greatest movie ever! And then he, like, dies. I lost my crap. Like, I was bawling. Like, oh my god, Optimus Prime dies! And the lady that was, like, two seats away from me with her kids, she, like, leans over and says, are you okay, son?
You were so upset about the death of Optimus Prime that strangers comforted you in the theater.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Well, I mean, I was, like, I don't know, 8 or 9, I think, and alone in a movie theater watching Transformers. I suppose she was worried about me. I don't know.
See, and then you didn't know that the AllSpark could just bring him back.
Or whatever.
You weren't even aware of that.
Or whatever it does.
Anyways, but it was that was a great movie that was really exciting for me. I love my Transformers. I had a billion of Transformers, and then I had I had a lot of them. I still have them, actually. I will admit it.
Actually think you had a billion. You didn't need to clarify that.
What? A billion? What?
A billion? I find that hard to believe. This whole podcast is highly suspect.
and to prove my geekiness, like, I still have them today, and I still have, like, on the box, there's, like, the tech specs, they were called. I cut them out. I filed them. I have all their parts still, like the
weapons. This does not surprise me at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
love,
like,
this.
Total nerd about the Transformers. Still have them today, like I said, and some of my most prized possessions.
Here's a question for you, Matt. Was there ever a time that one of your Transformers held a weapon that came with another Transformer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you
really?
Got it. Because that was a plot point. Like,
because of the story behind it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right, you don't just do it randomly. Of course not. No, that was like a plot point or something.
Got it.
Like, I can even nerd out even more. So if you guys know what a mush is.
Like the online text-based
game? Yes, multiple
game?
User something hallucination or something.
Sometimes called a mud or a moo.
Yep, the same thing. So those were a big thing back in the day, and, like, I actually...
Okay, wait, Egghead, what's happening? Okay. You both were
so
just speaking
all,
the language.
Fozzie, so... Did you think we said munch?
No. I thought you said mush, right?
Mush.
Is that what you said? M-U-S-H?
M-U-S-H, yeah. It stands for, like, multiple user something.
Yeah,
wait,
so, like,
one person explained this to me.
Yeah, I'm going to... Back in the day, when the internet's, like, infancy, like, there was, like, text-based games that you could play... and there wasn't really pictures or anything, but, like, you could, type and talk to people and stuff. And it was a big deal that you could play this, like, text-based game with other people, and they would, like, make it a role-playing game and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, there'd be different ones, and there's, like, a Transformers one, and, like, I played I had to, like, fill out a 3-page application and, like, do all these hoops, and I got to be Optimus Prime. Like, so I'll take my nerdiness to even another level right there.
So, like, of everybody on the internet, you were Optimus Prime.
Well, in this particular mush, there was only, like, probably a few hundred people. But, I mean...
Oh,
like,
that's so impressive.
But it was, like, a big deal. It just shows you how, like, nerdy I was about Transformers. So.
How many people have you explained what a mush was for the purpose of telling that story?
Probably, like, 2.
And we're it. It's us. He's never admitted it till this day.
My wife almost left me the first time I explained it.
No. Awesome. All right, Fozzie, what about you?
I have a question for Matt, too. Like, you'd be the person to ask, which, because you might hate this question, but I was never into Transformers, A, because I found them challenging. I couldn't figure out how to fold them back together and what goes where, and I just get frustrated. But B, I was never really into them because, like, it was one of those, like, logic things where the logic got in the way for me and I couldn't, and it just frustrated me, kind of like the Harry Potter movies. I can't make myself stop thinking about the logic of it to enjoy it. Why do robots from outer space look like cars from Earth? I've never understood this.
That's because they're trying to blend in, because although they're very powerful creatures, if they, like, just walk around, like, say we're taking over the world, like, the forces of the nations could, like, nuke them or find them or take care of them. So they're robots in disguise. So they scan the planet looking for vehicles and such that they can turn into, so they can move about freely amongst us.
So I guess the question was more...
Was that nerdy enough answer for
it? Yeah. It wasn't... I guess it wasn't why, but how. How do they... Do they just paint themselves? Or is it like the movie where they can actually, like, just turn into anything?
It depends. Oh, man, we're getting so nerdy here. All right, so it depends on the canon that you're looking at. Like, if you're going by comic books, if you're going by the cartoon...
One of them was a canon, too?
Oh, yeah, there was
Actually, there was a canon. Kind of the original cartoon / comic book story is that Cybertron's dying. They're trying to leave to look for new worlds and stuff for energy and so on. Mm-hmm. And the Autobots ship and the Decepticon ship are in a fight, and they basically blast the hell out of each other, and they both crash on Earth, which is an energy, like, rich environment, no inhabitation and stuff. But they crash, and they're all, like, put into suspended animation. Okay. And so, like, hundreds of thousands of years pass before they're accidentally, like, reactivated at some emergency protocol. I don't remember exactly. And then, so the automatic thing is to repair them, and, like, they start the computers, the ARC for the Autobots, for example. Teletron is the computer. Man, I'm such a nerd. And it, like, scans the world and finds all it's inhabited, so that they, like, start scanning these machines and stuff, thinking that that might be the way to let them roam about and so on. So that's how, and then they fix the robots, that, like, Optimus Prime, they fix him and stuff, and they make him so that he transforms into a Earth vehicle opposed to a Cybertron vehicle, which he used to transform to.
Okay, again, though, how? do they paint him physically?
No, well, I mean, they're robots, so, like, they're, like, I mean, like, there's, like, you know, arc welders and shit, you know, like, piecing them together. And
they're, like, also, I mean, like, super advanced technology, right? So they, right. They just figured it out, Fozzie.
All right, fine. I'm fine with that. I'll let it go. So the toy that I was into the most when I was a kid, it was pretty straightforward, and you didn't have to think about it too much. It was just a group of, like, super fighters from all over the globe who've chosen to fight for America because fuck yeah. And that was G.I. Joe.
Oh, hell yeah.
No, and G.I. Joe just went to prove, no matter what age you were, no matter what race, no matter what nation you're from, America is the best.
G.I. Joe.
Yep, that's the lesson I learned as a kid. I had every single G.I. Joe. I remember finding Shipwreck in a store in a Walmart in Quincy, Illinois, and freaking my shit out because he was really hard to find. And he had the episode where he dated a mermaid. And I thought that was the coolest thing I had ever seen up to that point.
What G.I. Joe taught me is, no matter what kind of horrific crash or laser blaster is, somebody will pop out with a parachute and they'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, the last minute.
Yep.
Yeah. And good guys shoot green and bad guys shoot red. To this day, I'm convinced that's why I'm not a Republican, because they're all red. Like, no way. I'm not going to be a red state. That's obviously Cobra.
That's Cobra.
Cobra!
That's amazing. Yeah, exactly. But Cobra always had the cooler... See, I always had a problem because I always thought the bad guys had the cooler, like, rank and file. Like, I always Cobra figures, like, and I always liked Decepticons better and stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they did stuff, too. Remember, like, you know, there was some that would, like, glow in the light, and then there was some...
There was that one dude that changed color in water, or changed color with his temperature or something.
And there were the two slightly homoerotic brothers, Tomaz and Zaymot.
Yeah, that's it. And, what was the guy's name that turned colors? He was like, Zoltar, he drove around a water moccasin. Yeah,
that's Zoltar, that's right.
Zoltar.
Zoltan. Wait, Zoltan. No, Zoltar was the
big
genie from Big, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Zoltan was, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen any G.I. Joes, but I was a nut for G.I. Joes when I was a kid. But sure. I was a spoiled kid. Like, we've talked about this a little bit. I thought, like, for a while, I kind of thought I was a rich kid, but now I'm just realizing we were white trash. And, like, you know, one of the key identifiers of white trash is spending money on shit that you don't need. And so we might not have paid our bills, but I had every toy I could ever want.
Really?
I had Insectars, which were like giant bugmen. And then I also had He-Man, every single He-Man. I remember my dad one time, I had kind of gone through a phase where I had stopped playing with my action figures. I wasn't as interested. And I went to school one day. I came home and we had my playroom in this big old, you know, white trash house that we lived in where all my toys were kept. My dad wasn't working at the time and he had taken all day to set up this intense battle, like with like action figures on like popsicle sticks, and then there were some on strings, you know, it looked like they were flying.
Are you serious? That's amazing.
And it was amazing. I came home and it looked like there was this big battle going on in this room, and it completely reinvigorated my desire for all my action figures, so I started ripping them down and instantly playing with them again. I think I saw just a single tear run down my father's face.
He wanted to see it just one more time.
Yeah, right.
To play. One more time. Posse, can you play just one more time for Daddy?
No! Dad, I hate you! Shut up and give me some Cheetos! That was totally me when I was a kid.
My toys!
That was the worst.
Where's all the new toys I wanted? Right? They're all old toys!
Yeah, you fat turd! Go buy me new toys! I hate you! I was the worst. But I literally had every toy I ever wanted when I was a child. But I'd say G.I. Joe were my absolute favorite.
The story was so touching for a few minutes, and then
yeah.
Took a turn.
Yep.
How about you, Andy?
That's how I roll.
What were you into?
Well, I have, you know, it occurs to me that this podcast is going to be really good for kids who had money or kids whose families pretended they had money. my family was poor.
Neither.
Yeah, we were pretty poor when I was a kid.
Oh.
So I didn't really have a ton of toys. So, like, I definitely never had, like, a group of He-Man or a group of Transformers or a group of G.I. Joes. Although I liked all three of those things for sure, but for me, my memories are more of like individual dudes, right? So like, I remember I had the Transformer, the Autobot Transformer that turned into a boombox,
blaster.
Yeah, and he had like little,
hardly know her.
He had like little miniature robot things that transformed into cassette tapes. Now, see, here's an even weirder thing because the little miniature robot cassettes. So, like, which is the disguise? Because there's never like a humanoid robot, right? It's just a cassette tape. So, like, that's equivalent to like a car or something, right? Because that's the thing that they're disguising as. But then when you transform them, it would be like a little robot pterodactyl.
Wait, the cassette tape transformed into a pterodactyl?
Yeah. Well, for the Decepticons, yes.
On the Decepticon side, yeah.
On the Autobot
side, it was like little dudes, but on the Decepticon side, his name was Soundwave, is that right?
Soundwave was the Decepticon.
The bad guy,
and he had two, like, pterodactyl guys, but then he had dudes, too.
Oh, he did?
And then Blaster had dudes, and then he had a rhino and, like, a cougar.
Yeah. So like that was weird. So that's a weird thing. But I really loved that guy. I mean, I really loved Blaster. And then
Because it was the only toy you had?
Well, I mean, yeah.
That was your only friend because you were poor?
To some degree, yes. Wow. These were kind of one-at-a-time sort of scenarios. For He-Man, I had a He-Man one time that you could put caps from a cap gun in, and then you could, like, twist him around at the waist, and it would spring back like an exploding punch He-Man.
I remember that guy.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And then G.I. Joe's, so this is a weird thing. So for G.I. Joe's, I had a G.I. Joe who was like a shaman, like a Native American shaman. And he came with an eagle. And I was somehow so fascinated. I think maybe I first encountered him in a comic book. And then I got the figure. And I was so fascinated with that guy that started like a long term sort of fascination with like quasi-religious stuff for me. Like,
and you still have it.
I still have it. Yeah, no, I absolutely have it. Like, if you can give me like a pseudo religious movie, like any of that, like any kind of anything that has like creepy Catholic stuff in it, or like End of Days with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm all into that. Like,
this also explains all your turquoise jewelry. Now I know where that comes from.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if they had also made a G.I. Joe that was like a voodoo priest, it would have been all over. But they probably did.
I wonder if they ever did. They probably did. I want to know.
But yeah.
That was Spirit, right? Spirit. Was that?
Yep, that was
yeah.
Spirit. Yep, and his eagle was called, like, Freedom or something?
Probably.
Yeah, probably Freedom.
Yes, Freedom, yeah.
Yeah, I really loved that. And then that guy sort of set me down a path where I was only satisfied with a G.I. Joe, which is to say, since I only ever got to pick one like every 2 years or something, I would only ever pick one that had an animal companion. So there was like a canine cop guy.
Yep. Oh, remember him.
And he had like a German Shepherd. And then later they came out with a cobra guy that was like, his name was like Raptor or something, because he had... he also had birds, so I had like the Spirit version that was the G.I. Joe and the Raptor version that was Cobra. And that was
a big I remember
deal.
That.
Yeah,
that
was a big deal for me.
Was the G.I. Joe the good guy with the dog? Was that the like a junkyard dog? His name was
Mutt.
Mutt.
Yeah, no, was there only the one guy?
Well, maybe I don't know. I remember but Mutt I though.
Yeah, Mutt I remember there was an early one that was like, yeah, I think Junkyard Dog and Mutt was the, were the two, I don't know.
I'm Mutt and like Junkyard, the Junkyard was the dog's name.
Junkyard was the dog, yeah, and Mutt was the guy?
Yep.
Oh, okay, maybe so. I don't remember. But, yeah, so
I'm looking this up, there was also Law and Order. Like, I guess the guy's name was Law, and his dog, his German Shepherd's name was Order.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that might be who you had.
Familiar. I think that's who I had.
Was there a lot of spinoffs of that guy?
I would watch this show. A show called Law and Order. Why wouldn't you?
I would watch that show. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I remember when G.I. Joe started to, like, have... Who was the wrestler that was in there?
Well, Captain Slaughter showed up.
Yeah. Sergeant Slaughter. Yeah, he became a G.I. Joe character. Yeah, they started like putting real people in.
Yeah,
I love that.
Well, they did. Remember, they made a G.I. Joe out of William the Refrigerator Perry.
Oh, I remember that.
I think you had to mail in for it or something.
Yep, and I totally got it. That was shortly after the Super Bowl Shuffle.
Yeah,
which was amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the one time I was into sports as a kid, when they released a fancy dance number. Like, I was totally in. It's more of a book number. I was really into the Chicago football team, which their name was obviously.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Bears. The Bears. There it is. I had to jump to Saturday Night Live to get there. I was really into the Bears. I had a poster in my room. And I was like, yeah, go Bears. I love kill the everybody. Kill Cobra. That was the one time that I liked sports as a kid. And I got the William Refrigerator Perry because I think you had to save box tops or something. Or no, you had to save the UPCs from other action figures. And I sent in, yeah, those are good old days.
So I'm just now realizing something that makes poor little kid Andy angry. So what you're telling me is that you could get additional G.I. Joes by proving that you already had bought other G.I. Joes.
Yes.
But also paying some for it, too, I think. I think there was like a little
shipping and handling. It was like $1 shipping and handling or something.
Okay. That was a lot of money to you, though, wasn't it?
Star Wars guys, too. Like, that was the only way you could get the Emperor at the beginning, was you had to send away the Emperor.
Speaking of that, there was one Star Wars action figure. I know that doesn't really fall under this list, but like, I was obsessed with this action figure, and I don't even know what it was. It was just he was like a guy in like a gray suit with like a baseball cap, but like, he was like my favorite character, and I carried him around everywhere, and I'd like talk to him. I was such a weird little wiener as a kid too. That, you know, that kid that sits alone and eats bugs. That kid thought I was awful.
All of the Star Wars figures there are in the movies and stuff, and you picked an Imperial officer to be your buddy.
I guess so. The guy that gets, the guy that gets choked, I think. Because I want to be choked a little bit.
Paul Treatham. Paul Treatham was his name.
That's also the name of a gay bar in Chelsea. Yes. I remember one time when we were at like Kmart when I was a kid. I think my parents were like actually concerned because I carried this around. I wouldn't give it up, and I slept with it, and I took it to school every day. And they offered to buy me an Atari when we went if I would give them that action figure, that little character. And I cried and cried and refused, and I never got my Atari.
Whoa!
Yeah,
that's intense. That's deep.
Yeah, that's intense. We're still best friends to this day, guys. He goes with me everywhere.
Do I want to know where you keep him?
Probably not.
I thought.
We go everywhere except for on an airplane.
right.
Okay, so I mean, those are favorites, and that's obviously a big part of it. But when we're talking about, like, best toy, what sort of springs to mind for you when you think of, like, best 80s toy?
I got mine. Easy.
Shoot.
Well, whenever you see a period piece set in the 80s, there's always some jackass yahoo sitting there with, like, feathered hair and a pop collar playing with a Rubik's Cube, trying to prove how 80s he is.
Playing like, with a puzzle, you mean?
He's gaming. He's sitting there gaming. You know how you, like, game on a system? That was, like, 80s gaming.
But the question is that a toy?
Yeah, you play with it. You sit and play with it.
Is an Atari a toy?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Like, I would put that in this list if we're thinking, like, of the best-selling toy of the of the 80s. Yeah,
well,
I'd say so.
Are we talking best-selling, or are we talking just best?
Well, we'll get to nuts and bolts.
Settle down, dude.
But before we start the story, start digging that out. Let's talk. So you're saying Rubik's Cube in part because it is. Like quintessentially 80s.
Mind. Iconic of the 80s. Yep. Like, and also like pan-generational. Like, kids, I had one when I was a kid, but also my uncle had one, and he was a fucking idiot. So, like, anybody could play with a Rubik's Cube.
Alrighty. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I still think that's a puzzle, but we'll
all right. Well, still, you can think that, but we're still putting it on the list.
Because you solve a puzzle.
You mean, like, you don't like things that you have to try to figure out and put them back together and try to manipulate things and move them?
Not the same. I know you're uh-huh. doing not the same.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure the Rubik's Cube was sold, but the puzzles.
I think it was in the same aisle, but regardless. Irregardless.
It definitely
it's an interesting. Aisle. It does kind of bridge a little bit of a gap, right? Because it is kind of a game. It's kind of a puzzle. It doesn't have the same sort of collectible thing as some of these other toys do. Like, I know there were different versions of the Rubik's Cube, but that wasn't the big deal, right?
Right.
It kind of misses on that, but. But you're right. That's something
we'll get into.
Like, everybody had, and yeah, it's interesting. That's an interesting idea. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, and that's something we'll get into in metrics because, like, with the Transformers, there were tons of those.
Yeah,
you know, but with the Rubik's Cube, there were a couple iterations, but like over a period of time with Transformers, there were like 20, 30 out at a time that you could choose from Cube. And I did get to the point where I just, like, peel off the little stickers and I just move it around.
You
I'm like,
the worst.
Oh.
You were the worst kid.
You were that kid?
I remember when I figured that out, I'm like, here, I've been moving stuff around like an asshole. I can just do this. This is it.
You were the
I'm
worst
done.
Kid.
They did come up with, like, other Rubik's Cube stuff. Like, I remember, like, a glow-in-the-dark one so you could play it when you were in bed.
Oh, yep. I would peel off the stickers and put them on in the right order, and then I'd be like, Mom, I need another Rubik's Cube!
Oh, no, shut up. Oh,
that was awful.
Just out of curiosity, when you stopped playing with the Rubik's Cube, did your dad set up a bunch of Rubik's Cubes in your room in an epic battle?
Just fighting Rubik versus Rubik in a battle to the death.
Oh, geez.
Please, so son, play with your Rubik's Cube again one more time for Daddy.
I will say, so, like, I know everybody's feeling really sorry for my dad right now, but he was an asshole. One time he got me a electric train. I'm not talking about molesting me or beating me. That's separate from this issue.
Oh, right,
the
right.
Real issue
just
is...
around toys specifically, he was an asshole.
Exactly. This is what really sticks in my craw. He bought me a...
Stuck what in your craw?
He bought me a toy train 1 year. And I was so for Christmas, and I was so excited. I woke up and there was like on the table on this big piece of plywood, and it was set up, and there were like trees, and there was a little town. They had like he had spent all night, I'm sure, putting it together. At the time, I still believe Santa had brought it, like an idiot. But then he wouldn't ever let me play with it. Like I was super excited. He's like, "Well, no, let me show you how to do it." And then he just like control everything. And every time I try, he's like, "You don't understand yet." And this went on for weeks until he finally moved it from the table. And I never did once get to play with that train in the entire time we had it. So that's, fuck him.
That's such that's pretty awful. Weird. Yeah, that's
pretty yeah. Weird. Yeah, I'm glad you died of cancer. Nope, I took it too far. Sorry. Sorry.
Wow.
Realized right Ouch. Then. Sorry.
Wow.
I just yep. I heard myself saying it, and I yep. knew I had to, yeah.
Pull back from that one. Love you, Dad. Sorry about that.
Whoa.
All right, so let's move on. Let somebody else talk for a while. I've already dug a hole.
I'm uncomfortable.
Matt, what about you? What jumps to mind?
Well, I mean, not to belabor it, yeah, but I think, like, if you think about, like I said, Transformers had a lasting effect on toys. Like, ever since, like you said, there was no transforming. That's like, and now every freaking toy transforms into something. Even Frozen dolls are like, transform from this to this, or whatever, you know what I mean?
Mm, yeah.
And then also, Transformers are still being sold today, and have sold since 1984, 83, whenever they started. And they're still sold today.
And they're making another movie, right? Did I hear that recently? They're doing a
probably. I wouldn't doubt it. They seem to make $1 billion off of those, so I wouldn't doubt it.
Do they? I mean, jeez Louise.
I know. Well, I mean, I don't get it either.
I know Andy and I disagree on this, but I did like the first one. I did like the first
By
one.
By first one, you mean the first Michael Bay one.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But after that, it was a pretty quick decline, unfortunately.
Michael Bay, starring Mark Wahlberg and Peter Cullen, Transformers 5, scheduled for 2017. Plot is unknown.
Well,
will be when it comes out.
Exactly. Oh. That fourth
doesn't
one was
who got there first.
the fourth one was like 3 hours long. It was like seriously like 2 hours 45 minutes. And what's his name from Cloverfield was in it. T.J. Miller was in it. He did, and he was like the best friend working on the farm. He'd known him their whole life, and then he just gets shot by lasers, and they're like, wah, wah, wah.
Is that the one that had like the standee of Optimus Prime holding like a giant like medieval claymore?
I don't know. Maybe, because there were dinosaurs in this one.
Yep.
It was like time.
Nope.
No. All right.
Well, that is a Transformers thing. The Dinobots were a Transformers thing.
Well, yeah. Okay, but like, don't give me this like serious gritty take on the movie with the fucking Dinobots in it.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was supposed to be a serious gritty take or not.
Well, I think that's what those movies are, right? They're like action movies with. If it's not a serious gritty take, then the character design and all that kind of stuff is awful. Like, I don't know. Anyway,
well, and we're getting into movies
because it's like a thing. Where it's just every time I turn around, I see like there's some big things smashing into each other, and then when that is done, I'm like, I don't know. Did the good one win? I don't know what just, like, I can never figure out what happened. What's going on in this movie?
Yeah, I will go back to my earlier point, though, is Transformers have been a great toy for a long time. They've had long-lasting appeal. They were a movie that when they were, I was a kid, and they're movies again now. I still see, like, other people with, like, Transformer shirts and stuff all the time, like the retro
totally
ones.
True. Yep, totally true.
I see cars with Autobot symbols on them too.
Well, you can
still
pick those symbols out, like you know, just about anybody can pick those symbols out. I wonder how many people could tell you the words Autobot or Decepticon.
I know my 3-year-old daughter can.
Well, yeah, but that's your 3-year-old daughter.
I know.
I mean, everybody's seen those movies at this point too. I mean, they made $1 billion. I think it's pretty prolific now. I think most people would know the difference between an Autobot and a Decepticon.
Hang on, I think I got one of my kids coming upstairs. Hang on, we'll ask them 1 second.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, wow. We're,
no, this is market research.
The fourth wall or something? I don't know what this means. I'm...
If he gets really upset, he might. That this kid's strong.
This is my 13-year-old Gabe. Say hello, Gabe.
Hi.
Gabe, do you know...
Hi, Gabe. Here.
Okay. Do you know what the different factions of the Transformers are called? Like, there's a name for the good guys and a name for the bad guys.
I really should know this. Oh, wait. There's...
This is the symbol for the good guys. Do you know what the...
I'm so close.
No.
They transform into cars, Gabe.
No. Matt says they transform into cars. Like, that's going to help you.
Well, it does with the name. Autobots. There is a name.
Autobots,
name.
You got it. Do you know what the bad guys are called?
It's a Goldie Hawn movie, if that helps, from the 90s.
What the... You never see the bad guy thing anywhere.
They're the Decepticons. But you proved a good thing. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure
Thanks,
talking
Gabe.
To you. See you later, buddy.
Puberty's hit that kid hard since I saw him last.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a big guy. So
damn.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got... So we're going Rubik's Cube v. Transformers, really. Mm-hmm. So this is a...
How about you, Andy? What do you got?
V. Spirit?
I'll just defer to the rich kids and move on.
Oh, come on. No.
I mean, I don't know. I don't have a... Or... Well, I mean, like, in terms of best, like, I really like G.I. Joes and I really like T-Mans, but just thinking about them, like, neither are even remotely as iconic as the two that you said. Like, both He-Man and G.I. Joe sort of, I think, aspire to the kinds of iconic heights that the Transformers have, right? I don't know. Maybe G.I. Joe could give them a run for their money. But I don't feel strongly either way. So I think what we'll do is we'll try to come up with a list and we'll see what we can find. And then you know, ultimately we'll just look and see which is the better 80s toy, Transformers or the Rubik's Cube. I'll just pit you guys against each other. It's more fun for me then.
Ooh, I like this. Autobots versus Decepticons.
Toys
cubes
versus
cubes.
Toys versus Shut up. Puzzles. Both had little stickers that you inevitably peeled off unless you're mad
exactly.
at all the rules.
Yeah, but I didn't have to peel off the sticker of my Autobot to figure out to turn him into a car.
I could never figure out your Autobot. I remember my grandmother bought me some. I had no idea what was going on.
My dad one time bought me, and I, you know, this could have been a knockoff thing, but it was like a model kit. So it was like a model that you would build like normal, like a car or something, but it was like a Transformer model.
Do you guys remember this?
That sounds amazing.
It was tedious. Insanely difficult. And my dad, like, I remember him, like, he knew I liked models, and he kept, like, checking in on me, like, hey, how's that going? And I'm like, it's going great. And I don't know if I ever figured out how to actually get that thing together.
You're like, Dad, I met Cheryl Teagues. Yeah. I like those kind of models. You turd.
I love that's how Andy sounded when he was a child.
Right? Just poor with a lisp. That's how I picture him.
Headgear or something.
Yeah, but it was homemade headgear that you had just
Dad,
found in the trash.
Dad, why can't you be rich? I want more toys.
God. We so go back to being mean kids, like elementary school, picking on the poor kid.
I'll tell you what,
it instantly.
It took 20-something minutes.
Yeah, I know. We're awful. It's so funny how, like, I just have to throw this out that, like, being a kid, some of the things from being a kid never end. I was in a Starbucks recently, and there were all these, like, tween girls there, and you could immediately tell who was, like, the alpha, who was the queen bee.
Oh, yeah.
All the other girls were kind of buzzing around her, and, like, she'd say something, and they all laugh, and she was really nicely dressed. And instantly, there was a little part of me that wanted her to like me. Like, I was trying to be, like, really funny. I wanted to say something and make her laugh, and, like, I instantly wanted to be her best friend.
That's great.
Shit never goes away.
That's pretty great.
And I have a zit on my nose right now. Some shit never ends either.
You were out, yeah.
Oh, it's the worst.
Before we get too deep into our feelings, and I am unable to conceal this giant poor chip on my shoulder, let's take a short break, and we'll come back and discuss some nuts and bolts. All right, so let's dig in a little bit to how we're actually going to measure what the best toy is. So I think just right out of the gate, we have toy sales. So how many toys were sold? But there's there's a little bit of discussion there, I think, because...
I agree, because...
Are we talking about all time, or are we just talking about in the 80s?
Well, and also, like I said, you know, at one time, there were like 20 or 30 different Transformers that you could buy,
right.
Whereas there might be one Rubik's Cube. Maybe we need to flatten that
somehow.
Yeah,
like, what's a unit?
Yeah.
Well, but like I said, there's different Rubik's Cubes. There's mini Rubik's Cubes, there's a giant one, there's the glow-and-dark one, there was the neon pink one, there was the fluorescent one.
I remember they released, like, even when I was a little kid, I remembered, like, somebody I knew had, like, a 5x5 one.
What does that even mean?
Instead of 5x3,
you mean bigger?
Yeah, it was, like, bigger and had more colors.
Oh, that's I remember, so like, many the stickers to peel off.
There was, like, keychain ones, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the keychain one's a little bit different, because there was also, like, keychain Transformers, and right? I mean, like, seems like there would have been.
Yeah, well, there was a ton of Transformers made. Don't get me wrong. Like, and how do you do that? Like, do you just, I don't know, it's a brand. I don't know. I think you just, if you could possibly do it, you just put the brand together, like, all of Rubik's Cube, no matter how weird iterations, and then all of Transformers.
We might be able to do, like, a divided, like, a division thing, right? So if there's 8 different Rubik's Cubes, and there's 70 different Transformers, then we can divide there and see what we can find.
Okay. I mean, I'll leave it to your math.
We'll take it into account. We'll take it into account. We discussed.
There has probably been literally, and I'm not joking, at least 1,000 different Transformers.
Well, that's a lot. So,
you mean a billion?
I bet you it's 2,000. Like, I think I'm below on that.
That's craziness.
Remember, it's been 30 years.
Yeah, well, that's another good point. So, I mean, I think longevity matters, right? Like, are these things still around? We know in the cases of what we've already talked about, there are, but... it will be interesting to look and see if there were any, like you know, total sort of flameouts from the 80s, right, that, like, started really hot and then kind of disappeared.
Like Popples?
Yeah, or, like, glowworms. Well, that was a thing.
Yeah.
I remember glowworms.
But
my pet monster.
When we're talking about about sales, are we going to say all-time sales? I mean, I don't see why it would matter to say we're talking about the best toy franchise that was launched in the 80s, not the one that did the best in the 80s, right?
Right.
So we'll just talk all time sales, and then we'll look at how long they've stuck around.
Our two prime examples. They have done that. So
absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm not going to disagree too much, but I completely disagree.
Because
I thought that the conversation was going to be about best of the 80s, like best toy of the 80s. And if we go beyond that, well, yeah, they kept manufacturing Transformers, and they made movies, and they did all these different things. But there's not much.
How much time?
Actually,
I mean,
can,
like,
we do both, Andy? Can
yeah,
we do?
Can yeah, we'll see if we can do both. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, okay. Fozzie, I actually think that. From the argument perspective, like, long-term sales of Rubik's Cubes are probably pretty high.
Right. Yeah, I don't disagree on that, but I just know that there's been a resurgence in, you know, a billion movies.
That's true.
A billion nine-hour movies about Transformers.
Hey, that Rubik's Cube movie that came out was pretty... Oh, wait.
Well, speaking of...
but that was Donnie Wahlberg. it was just sad and depressing. It was Jim Jarmusch directing a Donnie Wahlberg starring film.
Hey, hold it. There's nothing wrong with Donnie Wahlberg. He's
time out. I love the idea of a Jim Jarmusch Rubik's Cube movie because it would be in black and white.
Yeah. Done. You're done right there.
That's amazing.
What I was going to say is, like, you could do something with, like, media, like, you know, movies made, TV shows spawn.
Yeah, real movies, not Jim Jarmusch.
Yes, real. Like, again, I bet you there's probably 20 to 30 different cartoon series of Transformers.
Yeah,
and I think that's important, absolutely important to look at that, but also pop culture, like I said earlier, pop culture references are going to be huge. Because, like I said, every movie from the 80s, you have some jackass sitting there playing with a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, you're right. So,
and that's just, like, indicative.
Yeah, so a way to measure, you know, references or sort of that kind of cultural impact is that's not necessarily like a Rubik's Cube property or even yeah, Transformers have some things like that where they show up in other stuff, oh, yeah. right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's been how many songs have been like had Transformer lines or thrown yeah. more than meets the eye or in the that's rap true. Song
yep.
or something?
Yep. Yeah, or like all those songs that talk about the Rubik's Cubes.
Yeah. Red, gold, and cube. Green. Red, gold, and green. That was about Rubik's cube.
No, I don't think so.
I really love puzzles, and I like to solve them.
Rubik's cube. There was that Beatles song, Turn, Turn, Turn. No, that was about Rubik's cubes.
No, I don't think so. That wasn't even the Beatles.
Oh, wait, who was that?
That's Boy
oh,
George.
The birds?
The birds, I think,
Boy
yeah.
George.
No, the Yardbirds or the birds, whatever. Oh, they're
stop,
all the same.
No, let's stop now. We're too far down the Boy George, and no, we have to stop. But, yeah, okay, yeah, I think that's a good call. So that's some good stuff. I mean, I think that's going to give us a nice chunk. So
so you're going to feed that into the computer?
Let's put it all into the, as far as I know, Computron 2000 that needs a better name.com.
Can we name it Teletron after the Transformers computer we talked about earlier?
Oh. Can we name him Rubik's Cube?
Oh, jeez.
The best boy from the 80s is Sean Austin. Yeah. Oh, toy!
Okay, wow, this is a Computron is really, really working this time. So, you know, in the past, what we've done is try to like boil this down to kind of like one number, right? Where I'd try to, we'd say like, give me a good like toy score or something, right? But in this case, we ran into a couple of issues. So, when I looked back to try to determine sales. So there are some inherent difficulties with this. First, turns out the toy industry not the most meticulous industry ever, and especially not when they were all coked up in the 80s.
Right. So, and with Robin Williams running it, for God's sake.
Exactly. There was a definite sort of Willy Wonka-ish vibe to what was going on, or at least what I could find. So what that means is that I've got, instead of having like one score where everything's just going to rank up, we're going to have a little opportunity to kind of talk through some of this stuff and kind of debate a little bit. So this is going to be This is going to be less sort of you know, hard line than we would normally like to do, but I do have a whole bunch of numbers I can talk about. So without further ado, let's dig into some of these numbers. So let's start with Fozzie's Rubik's Cube. How about that? So
sure.
By 2013, there were 375 million Rubik's Cubes sold.
Holy
now,
crap.
There are multiple varieties, and the licensing for Rubik's Cubes have changed hands a bunch. So some of the varieties are not like official Rubik's Cube varieties, right? Like there was a lot of like sort of knockoffs and patent violations and all that kind of stuff. But among things sold exactly that, you know, that actually had Rubik's Cube on them, there were 375 million. So
that's a big number.
That's a whole lot. That's a whole lot. It's big enough, for example, for it to be number 10 on USA Today's best-selling products of all time list that they put together in 2014, a list that includes the iPhone, Michael Jackson's Thriller, and the Toyota Corolla. So it's a weird.
That's
list.
A diverse that's, list.
Yeah. That's a weird list.
Yeah. And I'm glad to say I've owned all of those things.
There you go.
Yes. I like going with the crowd, just doing whatever people tell me to.
Well, you always do whatever USA Today says. I've said that.
Right. I read whatever book Oprah tells me to. I buy whatever USA Today tells me to.
So from a longevity standpoint, I mean, it's obviously still around. It actually just skates our rule where in terms of launching because the Magic Cube, which was invented by the same guy, was actually available in the late 70s. But it was like it was held together by magnets, and it was a slightly different design. And he sort of reformulated things, and the Rubik's Cube that we know now with that name wasn't available until 1980. So it gets all the whole decade. So it's 36 years. So it's been around that whole time. And then, you know, different permutations have happened since then. So that's
nothing as good as the original.
Nothing as good as the original. Probably not. Although the Rubik's Cube collectors, and we'll get into this in just a minute, but Rubik's Cube collectors do talk about how much the sort of movement has improved over the years. So, like, the way that the pieces interlock apparently has gotten better and better as they continue to make it, which I just love that there's some engineer somewhere whose job is to, like, make the Rubik's Cube work better. But
I love that there are people who's like are enthusiasts, Rubik's Cube enthusiasts, on their Tinder profile too.
That the 1989 model, the Cube 7, was really sticky on that one.
What is that guy's YouTube channel name?
Sticky stuff.
Cube Tube, obviously.
Cube Tube. Oh, of course it's Cube Tube. Well played. Well played. In terms of media tie-ins, not a lot for the Cube there. However, in the 1980s, there was a television cartoon series called Rubik the Amazing Cube.
I think I watched it. I really remember this.
There's a couple of interesting details about Rubik the Amazing Cube. So one of them, just, you know, for whatever reason, the creators of the show decided to give it a very, like, Hispanic bent. So the kids in the show were all Hispanic kids. They were Carlos, Lisa, and Ronaldo Rodriguez. The theme song of the show recorded by Menudo.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh,
and, nice. Yeah, and surprisingly, the Rubik, the cube, who had this creepy little troll face and feet pop out and could do, like, magic and stuff if you solved him. He, like, came to life if all of his colors matched up. Not voiced by Frank Welker, so there's a shocker.
What's his name? Optimus Prime? Oh, Frank Welker?
No,
who's Frank Welker?
Literally Welker. Everything else. Literally okay. Everything else.
He does a lot of
it. Yeah.
I named the one thing he didn't do. Yeah, okay,
exactly,
got it.
Exactly.
Cullen does Optimus Prime.
Yeah, Peter Cullen. But the
who was a voice on Jim and the Holograms once?
Oh, well, there
VT
you go.
Dubs.
There
yeah.
Go. So there was that cartoon. It didn't last for very long. In one season, 13 episodes.
I can't imagine why.
Shocking! Yeah. Shocking.
From September to December of 1983, as part of the Pac-Man / Rubik Amazing Cube Hour block.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I watched that as a kid, and I remember they showed like little Menudo videos too. And I remember being sure really into Menudo as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. So you have that. But you do have a bunch of other TV shows and movies, like a lot of them, where Rubik's Cubes show up. However, here's the thing. And to go back to the toy and puzzle debate, and I know, I mean, we'll just talk about this. I'm not trying to necessarily cast a judgment one way or the other here. However, in almost every film that I found that had a Rubik's Cube in it, it was handled by an adult as some indication of their intelligence, right?
Mm,
so, like, doing a Rubik's Cube is, like, part of the astronaut testing in Armageddon. Or there's the Will Smith movie where he, like, figures it out really fast and gets a job interview because a guy sees him do it. And
that movie was called Happiness.
Happiness, yeah, that's right. The only time I saw, was it Pursuit of Happiness?
Maybe. Oh, yeah, you're right. It was.
The only time that I found where there was a Rubik's Cube that was actually played with by a kid, I was like, oh, aha. But then I realized it was Let Me In and Let the Right One In, and the little kid was a vampire, so it doesn't really count. they were super old.
It's not a real kid.
That's not a real kid.
Yeah, so that kind of goes into like it being more like a puzzle or a game because its enduring sort of legacy is definitely in that group, right?
Or just a toy for really smart people. It could and be vampires. That's vampires. How it was marketed.
Obviously. And dumb people.
But there's also this enormous community of people who speed solve Rubik's cubes. And like, if you want some weird viewing, man, go on to YouTube and look for these competitions where these guys, they have these like pressure sensitive pads where you have to, the Rubik's cube is sitting in the middle and you have to put both hands on the pad, and then when you take your hands up, the time starts. So you pick your hands up and grab the cube and solve it, and then you put the cube down and put both hands back down on the pad, and that's how they time it. And,
oh my God!
Yeah, and here's the thing: because of the way the Rubik's cube works, you can easily sort of break it if you go too fast, and that's like right. part of these competitions. If you're not precise enough with your movements and you wreck this Rubik's cube, time runs until you put that fucker back together and solve it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That sounds intense. I saw a guy on the subway, like, really rapidly doing a Rubik's Cube one day, and I was just like, shut the fuck up. I hate you. You're just showing off. You just want attention. Yeah. It's like people, like, 5 years ago who were knitting, like, everybody was knitting on the subway. I hate people who want attention. I refuse to give it.
Well, there's even ones that are just one-handed, too, where you have to pick it up and solve it with one hand and then put it back. It's crazy.
Wait, like a regular Rubik's Cube, one-handed?
Yeah.
That's impossible.
It's crazy.
And then, wow.
I also saw a guy who made an attempt at building the world record Rubik's Cube. So the biggest one was a 22 by 22 square cube, and it's not. Yeah, they're not even all squares because of the what's required. But this poor guy. Twice tries to put this thing together, and I'm just gonna play you a short clip. So this is he live streamed the sort of final assembly and first test of his world record attempt, homemade 3D printed Rubik's Cube. Here's what happened.
All right, I'm gonna attempt the first turn. Oh man, the stiffness, the anticipation, the drama. Oh, goodness me, this is stiff. Experiencing massive piece separation. Oh! Nope.
It's so bad.
Oh my God, it's heartbreaking.
I'll put the link to that in the thing, but he just so everybody knows, he did eventually get the thing assembled, and it is in fact the world record Rubik's Cube. It's pretty crazy. It's really a marvel. It's 3D printed all these pieces. It's pretty wild. But
that's
intense. So there is definitely like that kind of enduring legacy. So I mean, that's certainly something to consider as we go through here. But, Fozzie, I have to throw a little rain on the Rubik's parade, okay? Because if we are going to include games in this sort of scenario, and like Matt specifically brought up Atari doesn't count because it was launched earlier than 1980. However, just as a aside, one of my sources for my research was I found a website that had scanned in a bunch of old catalogs, like department store catalogs. And man, was that a crazy sort of nostalgic rabbit hole going through like 1985 Sears holiday catalog. But
oh God, but that was amazing. All the haircuts.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
Yeah. Pants showed every ball back in the
80s. They totally
did. It was crazy.
They totally did. Well, and the best is like, you know, like all the cross references in the catalog, like you could really tell how hungry we were for the concept of hyperlink, because it'll be like, this is the G.I. Joe toy spread. And then there's like 12 things that are like, for G.I. Joe pajamas, go to this page, for G.I. Joe whatever, go to this page. And it's like all these poor Sears people trying to lay this catalog out. But yeah, in 1980, an Atari cost one in the JCPenney catalog, an Atari cost $144. I looked up inflation, and that is equivalent to 417 of today's dollars.
Jesus. Meaning that I don't play about Xbox Ones anymore.
No, yeah, meaning that an Atari in 1980 costs more than the like next gen gaming systems today.
You never could have afforded that as a kid.
No chance. But there was a gaming system that was released in the 1980s. So I actually kind of went down a little interesting path here, and there's some interesting reading if people want to follow up on it, but there was a video game crash of 1983. So, the
Nintendo came in and picked up the pieces.
Kind of, yeah. So there was a lot of quality issues, a lot of licensing issues. Even people cited that, like, you know, the art on the front of video game boxes was like this crazy epic art, and then you put it in and it's like you're moving squares around a screen, you know? So consumer satisfaction for video games was really low. And it crashed in 1983, and, like, people were so invested in video games as products that, like, it nearly put companies like Mattel out of business.
Oh,
because
wow.
They were so leveraged in video games that when the bottom fell out of that market, nothing happened. So everybody thought Nintendo was crazy to introduce the NES in America 2 years later in 1985. Like, nobody thought it was a good idea. But from 1985 to 2012, just the consoles that were released in that period of time sold 630.38 million.
Jesus. Is that more than the number that you gave to me?
375 million Rubik's Cubes.
Is less than 600 million something.
Well, and also a Nintendo cost $100. A Rubik's Cube cost $5.
Well, that's the other thing. From a revenue standpoint, like, that's crazy. And actually, one of the things that the Rubik's Cube, that they said the reason that sort of the licensing got passed around a lot, is that it's relatively hard to make money on a Rubik's Cube. It's such a simple little thing that there's like a top to the price market on it, and so you're only ever going to make so much on a Rubik's Cube, right? Like,
right. And so it's like having a one-legged hooker.
Yeah, exactly. It's not super profitable. Yeah. Exactly.
Gotcha.
Can she solve a Rubik's Cube with one leg? Is
oh, well.
Now you Mexico, yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, so Nintendo, still around, obviously, was launched in 1985, so that's 31 years. And they introduced a whole bunch of stuff that, like, we sort of think of as normal now, but that was specifically in response to the video game crisis. Like, you remember that little golden seal that was on the cover of Nintendo video, like, NES games?
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
That was specifically to say, like, this is a licensed Nintendo product, and it's not going to have any weird quality issues because somebody else besides us tried to make it, right? Which was like a direct response to people's concerns from prior to that. And that's why all that shit had weird names. Remember, like, games were like Power Packs, and there was like it wasn't called a video game console, it was called like a control console or whatever. And it was like specifically trying to differentiate itself from all that stuff.
Interesting.
But in terms of, you know, like, media tie-ins and cultural impact, like, it's impossible to measure Nintendo. Like, when you just think about the Mario franchise, you've got Zelda, you've got you've got
Lara Croft.
Well, Croft started on Nintendo, but you could say that, like, those second and third generation video games sort of owe their existence to the 8-bit success, right? So there is something to be made there. Then you have,
what was the video game? Wait, what was the one where the guy had to swing over and there were alligators?
Castlevania,
in the pit?
You're talking about? Or no, you're Pitfall. Talking about Pitfall. Yeah, Pitfall.
Pitfall. Was that Nintendo?
I think there was a Nintendo version, but that was a pretty early Atari game. Yeah.
Okay. I was never a gamer as a kid, so keep going.
There you go.
Well, I'm learning things.
I mean, that's. I think that furthers the thing, though. Is like, I don't know if you can throw Nintendo or Atari into the toy bucket. Plus, you have the whole, like, well, the maybe. Nintendo is the device you play the games on. I don't know, like, the game individually. Like, I would agree. Like, is what was the best video game? Like, it's weird to throw Nintendo and every single thing that's ever been played on it into one bucket.
Well, really, I'm just arguing that the waters get pretty muddy if you start to reach into the game realm, right?
Yeah. You really did rain on my parade.
Well, I just wanted to kind of.
What are you talking about? You talked about your little 80s cartoon. It was great. Freaky cube running around.
Right. I do remember that very specifically. It was, and remember how everything got a cartoon eventually, even if it was just a couple?
Well, there was a
like
cool
Punky
was
Brewster.
Nintendo cartoon that was Captain N and the Power something. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. That's
that
right.
That was crazy. That was a crazy cartoon. My dad worked like an overnight job, I think, and I remembered he would bring us home. I think this is when he was a cop. And well, this is going to be an even funnier story now that I've said that out loud, but he would bring home donuts on Saturday morning. And whenever he got home was the same time that Captain N came on Saturday morning cartoons. So, like, I have this indelible connection between that cartoon and a Krispy Kreme donut on Saturday morning.
Oh, my God. You really did have a good childhood. Even being poor, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, that was Krispy Kreme donuts every week, dude.
He probably got them for free. He was probably strong-arming the donut guy. I hate for something to happen to this donut shop.
Nice donut shop.
It'd be a shame if these things had more than one hole in them.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
Oh God. Anyway, oh, it's amazing.
I don't know why I just cast my dad as a strong arm donut hustler. I don't think my dad actually did that. Love you, Dad. Okay. Anyway.
Because, yes, he's listening to this, I'm sure.
Tough night for dads. God.
Tough night for dads.
You want me to make fun of my dad now just so we can make it?
You better before the show's over. We're going to feel like assholes.
So let's get into
you watch a lot of Caroline in the City.
Ah, yeah. Oh, you're doing it. You're doing that thing. I love it.
So let's get into some of the other stuff. So there's sort of a rash of toys that kind of fit into this, you know, fit into these definitions that just kind of fall short. So I found a bunch of, like, you know, best toys of the 80s list and stuff that included, like, My Little Ponies and Strawberry Shortcakes and Pound Puppies and Rainbow,
oh, yeah.
Rainbow Bright.
I think we were being too gender normative with our lists. I didn't even think of those.
Well, we were talking about what we played with when we were kids, right? So
yeah,
it was
a different
sort of more, it was definitely a more gender normative time. But then even as you dug into the other stuff, there was like Koosh balls. Jenga was released.
Language.
In the 80s, right?
Oh, wow.
Jenga?
But,
oh,
yeah,
Jenga.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot what that was for a second.
But of that group,
sounded vaguely ethnic.
They were all in, like, the Jenga, vaguely ethnic Jenga.
I didn't know what was happening. Okay.
They were all in, like, the 10 to 20 million sold range, which is, you know, perfectly successful, and that's why you know all of those things that I just talked about. And they all, like we just said, you know, everybody gets a cartoon and all that kind of stuff, but none of them were, like, especially revolutionary. You could talk a little bit about My Little Pony and its, like, recent resurgence, but for whatever reason, those dolls just don't move as fast as some other stuff. So we just, even with their variety and all that kind of stuff, they just don't really kind of stack up. However, Care Bears are estimated to be about 40 million. So that's pretty great, especially for, like, a stuffed animal, right? So,
yeah, and they got their
sales
movie.
Sales or dollars?
Sales, units.
Okay.
Yeah, 40 okay, million gotcha. Individual bears. They did. They got a couple of movies, I think. And I'm sure there was good a TV show for Care Bears as well. So, anyway, yep. there was that group of things. But then you start getting into the realm of action figures. And an interesting note about action figure, that was a coin termed in the 1960s, for the original large release of G.I.
Joe.
Yeah, the big 12-inch dolls. But I think we can still count G.I. Joe in our sort of reckoning here, because they re-released as the smaller action figures that, you know, we think about when we think about, or at least people our age think about when they think about G.I. Joes. That re-release happened in 1982. So I think it counts. What do you guys think?
I agree.
Oh, that was absolutely a rebrand. I mean, before it was just like, wasn't it just a guy in a green suit?
It was a Barbie doll.
It was more like a Barbie doll, yeah. But
yeah, it was like Ken trying to pass under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Exactly. There was a sort of ill-fated nurse in that group, by the way, that was so unpopular that it was super rare. And recently one was auctioned for like $8,000. I just
need
to read that in my research.
Men are the worst. God, we're awful. Yeah. Anytime like there's anything feminine or anything about a woman, we got to shit on it.
So lots of G.I. Joes were sold, 450 million by 2013. Some of that has to do with a little bit of a resurgence because of modern movies, but but they are not. They don't crack the toy. I mean, most of that was from, you know, 1982 to around 1992. So most of those were sold in those first 10 years. Do you guys remember the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the USS Flag.
Yeah, the USS Flag. That's absolutely right. So when I was a kid, that was like the sort of ultimate status symbol among like rich kids. Toy.
Yeah.
Totally. You could get. So I was like, was it really that expensive? I wonder how much it was. So I looked it up. In my 1985 Sears Wishbook catalog, it retailed for $109.99. Which was like
$400.
Calculations are correct. That's like $1 billion
today,
right?
$242.38 today.
What?
So that's like buying a kid a $242 action figure thing today. Now,
that was amazing.
It was seven feet long, and it was crazy for sure. Yeah. But yeah,
I remember going to play at friends' houses because they had that though.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah, no, I remember Chris Artheloni had it very specifically. But he also had a lawn jockey, and looking back, I think he was racist. So, yeah. It was ill-gotten gains that he had that. It was ill-gotten gains that he had that aircraft carrier. I'm sure that he just got it off the back of migrant labor.
I was just recently watching, like, the Toy Hunter or something it's called, and he, like, sells and finds toys, like, and he, like, sold one of those. For like, I don't remember, $1,000+ out of toys. Like, I just remember him having it.
Of the
aircraft carrier?
Aircraft carrier? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, to give you an idea, I also have the catalog page from that same year for He-Man's Castle Grayskull.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is sort of the big deal. You got an idea? If the aircraft carrier was $109 in 1985, how much was Castle Grayskull?
50. We're going 50.
Yeah, you mean in 80s dollars, right?
Yeah, 1985 dollars, yeah.
I'm going to go $39.99.
So, Snake Mountain, which was like the second generation sort of scary thing.
Had the microphone.
Yeah.
I loved that.
That was $44.99. Castle Grayskull, only
$29.99. Oh.
A real bargain by comparison, I would say.
Yeah, evil really does beat good.
Yeah, right?
It turns out. All the time.
So anyway.
That does make sense, though, because I think of, like, the Transformer big toys like Omega Supreme and stuff were probably around that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, and, like, the Evil Castle had the microphone, and it, like, did stuff. Grayskull was just there, and you could store your, like, cheap, stupid swords in it.
But it had the cool drawbridge and the, like, a trap. Remember it had a trap door?
Don't be dissing Grayskull.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
It looked evil, and Grayskull looked evil. I know it was supposed to be good, but it was scary to me as a kid.
Well, I was always a confusing thing, because it was by the power of Grayskull that he turned into He-Man, but then didn't Skeletor live in Grayskull, or did He-Man live in Grayskull?
No, Skeletor lived in Snake Mountain.
Oh, in Snake Mountain. Oh, okay.
Right. I do know that, like, the witch on She-Ra was named Castaspella.
God,
that show was stupid. We were such stupid kids.
Oh yeah,
we thought that was clever.
Well, yeah. there's a character, the drug dealer in Attack of the Clones, is named Sleaze Baggio, so it's not like there's that much of a difference. In terms of longevity, to me, G.I. Joe feels like there's less longevity. I mean, they're certainly still around, and it's certainly still a thing, but. Those movies are not insanely popular, and
The Rock really hurt us.
And you know, the sales of those toys don't crack the top charts anymore, even when the movies come out. And it feels to me like G.I. Joe exists more in a nostalgic realm than in any kind of continued relevance. I know that's a little bit of a soft thing, but I feel like that holds up by comparison. What do you guys think there?
I 100% agree.
I'm down.
And I think that the movies were pretty spot on. You know, they did the He-Man movie in the 80s, and we're like, what the hell is this? Tila has pants? No, thank you. then they do the G.I. Joe movie, and it's pretty spot on. I mean, they had to change a couple things to make it more film-friendly, but nothing was really changed, and it's just not that good. It's just not that good of a story, and not very good characters. And
I mean, the television show was very successful, although if you watch any of that now, it's nightmare material. And the comic book was very successful. That was actually a pretty successful title for a long time, the G.I. Joe comic book. So I mean it definitely staked its claim, but just in terms of like how long it lasted, I mean I think we are going to remember it like I'm not sure if I, you know, I don't know that my kids can name a single G.I. Joe character, you know?
The Rock. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Exactly. Yeah, that's almost certainly the answer you'd get, yeah.
Yep.
So, which is too bad because, you know, that means Storm Shadow is lost to time. And Snake Eyes. Those were
Snake Eyes was a great character.
Oh, don't forget Lady J. She was badass. Jumpsuit and her little gloves and her sassy haircut.
And then they had the bad Lady J, the Baroness. Remember her?
Oh, yes. Anyway, so. Loved the Baroness. She had hair. Like plastic hair, but it was still long hair. Like, that was amazing.
Super deep V-cut jumpsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was intense.
She was like from the Eastern Bloc.
Yeah.
Those giant aviator glasses.
So similar to that is He-Man is in a similar position, although He-Man's cultural relevance really lasted even less long of a time. Couldn't find any reliable sales figures on He-Man. The best I could come up with was something around 200 million. There was an interesting bit of history on He-Man, though, because the reason that He-Man was created for Mattel was the guy that was the lead designer at Mattel passed on
was super gay.
Yeah,
and
passed on the opportunity to make to design the Star Wars figures.
Interesting.
Because he was just like, nah, no thanks. Didn't really think it was going to be much of a thing. So
this movie's going nowhere.
Right, exactly. So specifically when those action figures like blew up, Mattel was like, all right, we got to have something. So that's part of the reason why they're bigger, because they were trying to, trying to kind of differentiate themselves in the action figure realm a little bit. And also, when he originally presented He-Man, it was a super generic character that was, you know, in his mind could have been like a cowboy or like this barbarian guy or like a space guy. And Mattel was like, yeah, let's do with the weird sword barbarian thing. So like,
depends on what theme night it is at the gay bar.
It's exactly right. He-Man could have been totally, totally different. So anyway, there was some really interesting stuff with He-Man, and I think, you know, it deserves some credit for having some memorable characters and specifically memorable action figures like the little Chia Pet Moss Man guy. And the
he was called Moss Man, by the way.
He was Moss Man, yeah. And I think his name was...
It's Mossman. He's Jewish.
Yeah. And there was a skunk-shaped guy named Stinkor.
Skunkor.
Stinkor.
Or was it Stinkor?
Yeah, and maybe it was Stinkor. His action figure actually smelled bad.
Yeah, I remember it smelled like tires.
Yeah.
I had that one.
Like really, yeah, crazy. Anyway,
yeah.
I find that amusing. Like, here you go, kids. Here's a stinky action figure. yeah, I can't wait. So he's basically that brings us to Transformers, which were pretty intense. By 2013, Transformers had topped the 450 million mark, and they're probably actually higher than that because there's been some pretty renewed interest because of movies that have released since then. So they, you know, that when I looked at the 1985 JCPenney, I mean Sears catalog, they had 5 pages of Transformers, which was by far more than any other toy franchise.
How many pages of Rubik's Cubes were there?
Could not find the Rubik's Cube in the Sears catalog, nor could I find the Nintendo in the Sears catalog. So it's possible that Sears didn't sell the Nintendo, which would have been a real miss for Sears, it seems like. But anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, Transformers. In 1985, Optimus Prime, with his big trailer and everything, cost $23.99.
Oh, I said $26. Yeah. Sorry. That was
probably with tax, right?
Oh, yeah. See, there you go.
Which is the equivalent to $52 today. So,
wow.
Pretty pricey toy. Most Transformers retail for around $10 to $13 back in the 80s. So they were a little bit pricier than your G.I. Joe or your He-Mans, which were in the $4 and $5 range, depending on the figures. So,
see, and that's the white trash thing. I think my parents were just convincing me I didn't like Transformers because they were expensive.
Well,
they're like,
it's hard,
isn't it?
Two toys in one, right? So maybe that was part of it.
That makes sense.
So,
good business model.
When you talk about media tie-ins, one of the most successful cartoon franchises of the 1980s, including the animated movie, which actually did reasonably well in the movie theater and was kind of a surprise to a lot of people.
Can I ask a question? I don't remember. Was there a Transformers cartoon, weekly cartoon?
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember absolutely. That.
For
okay.
years and years and years. And they they continually reinvented that thing.
It's
okay.
still on today.
Yep.
You can find a Transformers cartoon right now.
How close is it to the, I guess there are a lot of iterations, but how close is it to the movies that from, like, the night? The
well, the original, go ahead, man.
Well, I was going to say, from the 80s or the one from, like, Michael Bay?
The Michael Bay. That's the one I'm
so,
most familiar with.
Generally speaking, they made, like, one or two that were based on the movies, but generally speaking, they have found that does not resonate with kids, and they're generally more the anime-style, Japanese-style cartoons with Transformer guys in them now.
No, I'm sorry. I mean the story. Is there a Sam Witwicky in the 80s cartoons?
No, it's all in the 80s cartoons. It's not Sam Witwicky. It's there is a kid that drives around.
Yeah,
yeah the kid drives around Bumblebee.
And, oh, okay, so kind of close.
Yeah, it was similar. It was similar.
Interesting. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't know where you were going with that. Sorry.
But if there's no Sam Witwicky, I'm not interested at all.
There you go.
I only see movies with Sam Witwicky.
That's
the only thing. Yep, it's the only movies I'm ever interested in.
So that franchise was really successful. The cartoon franchise was very successful. The comic books were very successful. They sold. It was sort of like a back and forth every year between them and G.I. Joe. And in fact, it was a little bit of a competition between the writing staff, I read, to see who could introduce the storyline that would push them over the top. Like there was a rivalry between the G.I. Joe comic book writers and the Transformers comic book writers.
Oh, interesting.
But the biggest deal for Transformers when you talk about sort of tie-ins and stuff is the super successful movie franchise since Michael Bay took over. And even though we bitched a little bit about those movies, in terms of money, multiple billions of dollars have been made from these movies.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's it goes back and forth depending on what you're looking at and how many you include, but well over $5 billion at this point from that movie franchise.
Wow. God, it just amazes me how much money is available in the world. We totally can afford free college for everybody.
I know, it really is crazy.
So stupid.
Well, it's like that conversation we had about Dungeons & Dragons on the last episode where I was like, it only made $300,000, and we were like, hee-hee-hee-hee.
Right? Yeah, I would kill you for that amount of money.
Wow.
So that's kind of the rundown of the top ones, but I have one more sort of surprise entry I would like to suggest possibly belongs in at the top of the list in terms of iconic 1980 toy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
We have not mentioned at all yet. Can either of you, I'm just going to give you 1 second to sort of think it through and think if there's anything you can think of that we haven't pulled out of the gate yet that is 1980s. To me, it says 1980s to a T.
I'm going to say slap bracelets.
Nope.
Hogs.
Not a toy. What's that?
Hogs or
Cabbage Patch Kids?
It is the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Oh, son, you're so good at this, Matt. You're really good at this.
Cabbage Patch Kids.
I am a toy nerd.
So here's the thing about the Cabbage Patch Kids. In terms of overall sales numbers, I couldn't find like actual numbers, but I don't think we're going to get up anywhere close to the multiple hundreds of millions of things like we see with the Rubik's Cubes or with G.I. Joes or Transformers or something. However, in the first 2 months of their release, they sold as many as 5 million of those dolls in the first two months of their release.
I remember that was like the first toy that I ever remember was a panic on trying to get it. You know what I mean? Like the first like Tickle Me Elmo, whatever other toys have come past.
Well, that's actually part of why I think it deserves to be in the list, because there are actually things called, and I love this, the CPK riots. That's how they're referred to.
Oh my God.
Was the first instance in our country of like this retail violence, like the idea that you had to set up specific sort of lotteries or procedures for distributing merchandise to people because there were simply too many people who wanted to buy these toys. And now that's something that is sort of routine. Every time something new and popular comes out, it becomes this thing where parents are camping out to get them and all that kind of stuff. Even in the internet age, you still see that. And that really started with Cabbage Patch Kids. What's interesting about them, too, is that they started as like a designer status symbol toy. They were handmade by this one artist, this Xavier Rhodes guy, and his...
Isn't it Xavier Roberts?
Xavier Roberts, sorry, yeah. Xavier Rhodes, I think, is a pro wrestler.
Because I know somebody, I know a guy who has Xavier Roberts tattooed on his butt.
Oh, that's hilarious. As if he that's pretty funny. But like, it became a thing where, like, you know, the famous people's children had these dolls, and that was like a real push. So it also, it sort of ushers in some celebrity worship type stuff in like the earlier parts of that culture, in terms of that's actually going to affect my consumer decisions, right? And then in addition, Cabbage Patch Kids are credited with being the first sort of popular franchise to just whore out in terms of brand licenses. So within a year of the first Cabbage Patch Kids doll released, there were over 150 brand licenses, including like breakfast cereal and diapers.
God. You know, and I bet all of that was very organic, like the celebrity kids having these dolls. I bet that was just something that happened. Whereas now, like, that's marketing. Like, I think also Cabbage Patch taught people, like, oh shit, this works. So now let's give the kids the new iPhone or whatever it is.
Surrey Cruise or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing too was that it was the first time that these toy franchises were showing up on real products. So before, there would be like Barbie hair care set, but it's like a shitty little brush and fake shampoo and shit. It's not like actual consumer products. But then Cabbage Patch Kids comes along, and there's like a Cabbage Patch Kids hairbrush or whatever that's like a legit hairbrush that just happens to have Cabbage Patch Kids on it, right? And that was like a new thing at the time. So in terms of those kind of cultural things, I just feel like, you know, they really worked. There was cartoons. Cabbage Patch Kids is the last thing I remember. It was a big deal when the Christmas special came out. You remember how it was always like a thing? Was like new animated whatever Garfield and California Raisins and shit. And then there was the Cabbage Patch Kids Christmas special was a big deal.
Yeah. Did either of you have one?
I did not. No.
I did not. My sister did.
But I think my sisters did too. Which I think must have been like a. My grandmother gave him a present or something, you know?
Right.
I remember it was, like, a big deal, though. Like, still, like, it was, like, into that already craze, and, like, she got a Cabbage Patch Kid, and it was like, holy shit. Because you got the
adoption certificate with it, and it seemed so official.
What was weird about it is, if I remember right, it wasn't even really that age appropriate for her anymore. It was more of, like, a collector's thing when she got it, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Well, again, going back to being gender normative, I wanted one, and I couldn't have one, and I even would settle for my buddy doll, but I couldn't get that because it was a doll. But I remember my friend Jake got a My Buddy doll, and I tried to convince my parents, and they're like, no, Jake is queer. And I was like, huh, you know, Dad, you're going to know something in a few years. Like, yeah, I hate to break it to you, Dad.
Yeah, so anyway, I think that sort of Cabbage Patch Kids belong in that. In that conversation, and the more I looked at it, the more I felt like, you know, they really, to me, they sort of take the top place. When I think about the 80s and toys in the 80s, like, for me, it's hard to come up with something that's more iconic than a Cabbage Patch Kid.
Yep, absolutely. I 100% agree.
Matt, have we convinced you, is a Cabbage Patch Kid more iconic to the 80s than a Transformer?
Just iconic. I don't know. I think they're equally iconic. I think they're both pretty iconic.
Equally iconic. Well,
admit when he's wrong.
Because how do you define iconic? Like, you know, I mean?
Again,
like,
we don't have that. We don't have like a specific metric this time. But like,
he just wants you to say the words, Matt. Just say the words.
Well, no. The other question would be like, Fozzie, what about the Transformer versus Rubik's Cube debate?
Never.
You're right.
I completely agree. Like, based on the information that you gave me, I don't think there's any way it could compete. I think, again, I'm kind of siding with Matt. Iconically, I still see the Rubik's Cube as more 80s, but maybe that's just who we are and what we grew up with.
Maybe so.
I didn't I didn't really have Transformers around, and I just slept on Rubik's Cubes every night. So I that's how I grew up. I had a room filled with Rubik's Cubes. You know how you decide what
something's iconic of the 80s, actually? A really good way to do it is watch every episode of Family Guy and see if they make fun of the thing and how many times.
Oh, but there's so many obscure things in there.
But you know what I mean? Like they
make
like
fun of
Hee-Haw
four times.
I'm just saying, like they are very good at poking fun of things from our generation when we
so
were.
So Conway
kids.
Twitty was the most iconic singer of the 1980s.
Mr. Conway.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So right. Where do we go from here, Andy?
Well, I think we've kind of run it down. I mean, as far as we know. You know, there are some very strong 80s toy icons. As far as I know, or as far as I'm comfortable saying, for me, it's Cabbage Patch Kids.
As far as I know, I agree.
Wow. After all that money that we talked about and all those sales and all those media tie-ins, I think you guys are off your rockers.
As far as I know.
In some ways, I feel like the longevity of the Transformers and it's like, I don't know. I guess there is a difference in saying, like, which has been the most successful franchise versus which is the most 80s franchise, right?
Still think you're after rockers.
Still think you're not gonna give it. To
no, me. No way. Cabbage Patch Kids was like a flash in the pan for like 2 years.
No,
speaking of rockers, right. Where's Jim and the Holograms in all this? That's all I want to know.
Jim and the Holograms started as a cartoon show. Started as a cartoon show.
Transformers. If I remember right, your sales like the Transformers sold more than the Cabbage Patch Kids. More movies, more TV shows in the 80s, not just
so. In 1999, the U.S. Postal Service did a series of stamps representing the 1980s, and there was a whole bunch of stuff that they put on those postage stamps to like commemorate the decade. There was only one toy selected to commemorate the 1980s. Can you guess what it was?
The one that they could get a license doll? For. Boom.
Are you? You're so full of shit. You are so full of shit. It was the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Hasbro.
Yeah, I've seen those.
License to that because they're still making shit for it.
Okay, so as far as I know, I will say whatever it takes to make Matt stop arguing. So I'm done. I will admit whatever you want at this point, Matt. I'm over this.
You can follow the show on Twitter at As Far As I Twote. I am ironically Andy.
I am Fozzie Bear, B-A-R-E.
I am at Matt, A-F-A-I-K.
Music for Easy our show peasy. Is from Freesound users Gullius, Luffy, and Herbert Boylan. Please rate and review the show wherever you can find us. That is the best thing you can do, and we appreciate the support. We'll be coming back next time, and maybe, just maybe, we'll get Matt to admit that he's wrong. All right, so thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.